Welcome to the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast. Michael W. Dean of the Freedom Fiends cooks up a very special blend of liberty, guns, sex, rock and roll, drugs, and thriving in spite of the state in an increasingly worrying world. All with a rotating cast of nifty guests who are also up in the middle of the night.
So this is Michael Dean here on the Anarchy Gumbo, sponsored by Chick-fil-A. Just kidding.
And this is Dale Everett in the In Your Head Studios in Manchester, New Hampshire, sponsored by Flaming Freedom.
You're also sponsored by Chick-fil-A, aren't you?
Sure, the New Hampshire Chick-fil-A. Or the Nashua, New Hampshire Chick-fil-A, which cool. Is going to sponsor Pride Fest this year at New Hampshire.
Are they really?
Excellent. Yes.
They can do their own thing. They don't have to go with the silly demands of the owner.
I guess we're about to find out. We'll see if they get in trouble for it.
Nice.
Yeah.
I mean, that could enter in a whole conversation of, like, you know, people's right to do whatever they want. And, you know, a lot of the protesters are boycotting, which is good. But then a lot of the protesters are also, like, demanding government intervention, which is bad.
Yeah, that's where I split with them. I'm with them on boycotting. But I part ways when they start talking government intervention.
Well, yeah.
Do you actually want to talk about that on the actual show, or are you just testing the recording?
Well,
right?
We can use this, but let me. I don't need to go any further with it. You know.
Oh, okay. I'm fine. I just didn't know if you were going to keep any of this.
I didn't need to go gay so quick. All right. I am sort of bi. I don't know if you know that or not. I come off like a
big
macho gun nut, but I've had a lot of dicks in me in my day, so I can call people faggots. I guess
more than me. I haven't had that many in me.
I've probably had like 7 or 8 in me.
We're maybe about even. I don't know. I haven't counted, but
wow,
maybe even less. I might be even less than that.
You can tell that I'm basically like self-identify as hetero because I keep a list. I can tell you exactly how many women I've slept with because I got notches on my bedpost.
Started recording.
I always record both ends of an interview just in case the person tries to like edit it some way and frame me to say something I didn't.
That's not a bad idea, I guess.
Yeah, it's not. So, you know, it's kind of funny when we first got on here. It was as soon as you get on, I was getting an echo, and I was like, I'm getting an echo, and you're like, well, have you ever used Mumble before? And I'm like, duh, all day, every day. I just finished doing a live show on LRN along with you, so of course I use Mumble.
Well, I'm sorry. You know, the reason I asked that was because we initially had echo problems, and it had to do with the way my sound system was set up. It was playing it back. It was getting the Mumble in, and then everything was getting played back, sent back to Mumble. We actually had to do a filtering setup, and that was a little bit tedious. I didn't know.
Oh, I thought it was because you had your speakers on, or do you mean previously?
This time it was, but we actually had a problem initially that had nothing to do with that. It was something else.
You know, I need to ask you about that because there's a couple people I like to talk with, like the guy from Disindoctrination Podcast, Garrett, who no matter what computer he's using, there's echo of me when he's using it, and I don't have that problem with other people.
I bet he might have our problem, the same problem we had initially.
Well, before you tell me how to solve it, and this is that kind of podcast where we give news you can use, I just wanted to say it was kind of funny. Like, you had your speakers on. You and Derek, man, you guys are guys who do call-in shows, but when you call into a show, you're like, why am I getting echo? Yeah, the same reason you tell everyone who calls in, turn down your radio, please.
I've done that?
Derek, well, it's sort of a variation on that. I mean, you had your speakers on. You're wondering why you're getting echo. Derek called into our – we do a live Fiend show every Sunday, and then we do a non-live one every Wednesday or Tuesday. But today we tried doing the Tuesday one live on our streaming server, not on the LRN, like basically the 99-cent version of duplicating what LRN does, but with all our stuff. And we recorded it and put it out on our – RSS feed, which will be in the LRN feed, but we wanted to be able to do call-in shows if there's breaking news, you know. So it was a successful experiment. But Derek J called in to talk about the movie. We had him call in, and at first he's like, "I'm getting echo. I don't know why." And I'm like, "His speakers are on, man. He does a talk show. He should know that."
I know he's actually pretty good technically speaking, and so that's surprising to me. But then again, I just did it, and I do this all the time, and. You know, I'm very conscientious of turning the speakers off before I do my show. because I'll be in here working on my computer and I'll have them on and I don't want to have to wear headphones. But then it's time for the show. You got to put your headphones on, turn off the speakers, get good sound quality.
Yeah, I did something kind of idiotic when we did our live show. When we were done, I still had the streaming feed on. I forgot it. I didn't go back to the pre-recorded stuff we play 24/7. And Neema and I were doing our post-game show of like, well, what do you think? And like, you know, this advertiser has really been screwing up. Like, basically, I was bugging. You there?
Yes.
What was that?
That might have been my fault of having something like, on my boing. Computer. This is another thing that I normally turn off for the show that I forgot to turn off. So
I was bugging my own house, basically. Like, there were still two people on the streaming feed, I found out later, and they were listening to Neem and I have like a private business call, like complaining about somebody and naming them. I will never do that again. It was very embarrassing. And one guy's a friend and wrote me in and said, you know, you guys are still talking about blah, 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 and I can hear you. And I'm like, oh, shit. Okay. So what was your boing, boing sound?
Actually, it was a BDSM connecting website, like a dating website.
And it's got like a bell and a whip sound when it hits. What?
No, the sounds are pretty innocuous, I don't think. But, yeah.
Just, what's the name of the site?
Recon. And it's actually for gay men. I think it's primarily for gay men. So
I met my wife on a kink dating site, bondage.com, which I don't recommend that site. That's not a plug for them. They used to be really cool, and then they got bought out by Penthouse, and Penthouse just destroyed the site and made it something it wasn't. I never would have found her if Penthouse were running it the way they run it now, but... Yeah,
I don't think Recon is particularly bad. It's just the normal. It suffers from the normal thing that any dating site does, which is just flaky people and stuff like that. But that's really people using it, and they can't do too much about that.
What do you mean, flaky people?
Well, you know, just people that it's an internet thing, and so many people can go there and just kind of not be very serious about actually meeting a real person. They're just posers.
Yeah, there's a lot of ways to weed stuff like that out. There's actually an interesting site. You're a smart guy, so I probably don't need to show you this, but there's a document someone wrote. It's about 4 pages long, called Acid Test for Doms. You ever heard of it?
No.
You should do a search for it. I actually recommend it. I mean, it's aimed at,
I will. I'll check it out.
It's aimed at submissive women looking for a dominant man, but it's so inclusive about what to look for and what to avoid in internet dating that I've sent it to straight women. I mean, it's really good stuff. And some of it's really common sense, like, you know, meet the person in a public place the first time, etc. But there's some other stuff in there that's really good.
That's one of my policies. Yep.
Yep. So, I mean,
it's good for anybody. It doesn't matter whether you're the dom or the sub to have that policy. So,
yeah. What's actually you and I? Well, I got into a beef with you that you never reciprocated, and I'm not wanting to beef with you, especially since I totally feel like we're on the same side now that we've defended together against some weenie who is attacking us for our sexuality, for our kink sexuality, who was just an idiot and didn't understand it. But I wrote you an email a long time ago, kind of complaining about some things that you said on on Stephanie's cast, and I can barely remember what it was, but do you want to go into that? Do you remember
it? I can. Yeah, I'd love to go into it. Didn't I get back to you on that, or did I at least reply and try to expound what I was trying to say?
No, you wrote, as far as I remember, you wrote back and said, I don't know what this is referring to, because it was like I was writing Stephanie, and then the second or third email in, I started CCing you. And I forgot that you can't read my mind and didn't know what the first couple emails said. You wrote and said, I don't know what this is about. I wrote you back and briefly explained it. And I don't think you ever wrote back other than you or Stephanie said of you that I was misinterpreting what you'd said. And I went back and listened to it and didn't think I was. Basically, I thought you were saying that you were interested in kink, but that you thought people being interested in kink was indicative of that they had been abused as kids. And that's did you say that?
I think I said that I was wondering that and pondering that I was having not very many positive experiences, which is true for the most part. I've largely had not very positive experiences with actual people. You know, on the one hand, I'm interested in the subject and, And I've pursued it and not been very successful in terms of meeting people that I thought had a really healthy attitude and were still into kink and so forth. And so I'm probably going on a poor sample size or something. I'm just saying that that was something I was exploring as a possibility. I wasn't saying that that was my belief. I was saying that I'm thinking about that and wondering that. You know, with the understanding that based on my anecdotal experience, which is not scientific. So,
yeah, I there's a lot of weirdos out there who dabble in kink and consider themselves more of experts or practitioners that are kind of posers or are just sociopaths working in kink. I wouldn't say there's any higher percentage of sociopaths or people who were abused as children who become kinky than there are who are straight, but like, you know, vanilla sexuality.
Sure. Vanilla is a good word. That's what I usually use.
Yeah. Because it's like confused with straight. I mean, when I think of straight, I think square. So that's why I went there. I've had a lot of contact with people into kink, primarily sub women, you know, that I didn't sleep with because my wife and I used to do a kink podcast called Submission and Coffee from 2006 to 2008. And we got a lot of fan mail from women who were like, you guys say the things I want to say. You changed my life. Thank you for doing this. And I would chat with them and she and I would chat with them. And I got to know, I asked a lot of questions of them. And I've seen this as a question on kink boards about, were you abused as a kid? And it's like, the percentages are literally not any higher as far as I can tell. And my sample size isn't huge. It's probably 300 people, which is not a good study, but that's what I've seen personally.
Well, and I'll go ahead and say that I wasn't abused as a kid. Not any more than the average person. I think abuse is almost systemic in our society, but a lot of that has to go into the fact that so many people spank their children and do all these other things. And which I consider to be abuse, and I think most of the population is abused. But so that's not really, it sort of becomes irrelevant for the subject at that point, right? When everyone is abused in that manner. But and then to try and tie that to kink, and I would say that I was spanked a little, but compared to most people, I don't think it was that bad. So so I don't think that is a factor in why I'm into it now.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a lot of misconceptions about it, and that's one misconception. And I try to debunk misconceptions when I hear them, and I hear them a lot in Liberty, which really surprises me because it seems like, and I'm not speaking of you, this is what I thought you were doing, and I see now that you weren't, but I thought you were spreading misconceptions. And, you know, Hollywood does it all the time. They love kink. Because it's interesting and serial killers are more interesting if they're kinky or something. And it's not generally, you know, it has nothing to do with kink. Mm-hmm. And, you know, another, like I heard Adam Kokesh the other day, he was reading a letter from a user, a dominatrix, who said, can I be a libertarian and a dominatrix? And first of all, you know, who in the world would ask someone else, am I libertarian enough in my sexuality? Second of all, who would ask Adam? And thirdly, what dominatrix would ask some strong man, am I doing it right, sir? That is not, you know, I'd say maybe you're not a dominatrix if you're asking permission from some dude. But, you know, Adam's answer was horrible. It was like, well, I suppose it's okay, but, you know, I hope you weren't abused as a child. And the main thing is I want you to say, you know, it's okay, but don't turn into someone like the state with it. Don't turn into the state with your sexuality. And I'm thinking like, that would be like someone saying, you know, if they asked Adam or anybody, is it okay if I'm gay? If they said, yes, as long as you don't molest children, you know, they're taking like this common misperception of like something that 1% of 1% of the practitioners do and assuming and warning you like, well, don't do that. I wrote him and just bashed him about it, and I got an autoresponder back like a politician would send.
You know, you have some very good points. What I was going to say before you went into all that, and you sort of responded to me already, actually, but what I was going to say is I don't want to stifle. I can't help pondering all these things. I'm very fascinated with human psychology and what makes us into the people we are. And all that stuff. I can't help pondering it. And I've even pondered it with regard to, for instance, being gay. I've wondered, well, I know it's not genetic. There's plenty of evidence to show that it's not purely genetic. There's also a lot of evidence to show that there's some factors that are genetic that might make you, say, predisposed to be or more likely to be gay. They've shown that in identical twin studies and things like that. But so then I wonder, well, what might factor into that? There seems to be overwhelming evidence that it's pretty solidified by the time you're maybe 5 or 6 years old, but they don't think it's something that's, you know, necessarily solidified before you're even born. And so I have to wonder, well, what might contribute to it? And I speculated even on my own show that maybe a lot of us are actually inclined to be more bisexual than you might think based on the statistics, and that we suppress one side or the other based on some kind of personal experience.
Do you mean that bisexual, or most kinky people are bisexual?
No, I suspect, and again, this is just me speculating, and it's not scientific, but I can't help but ponder these things. I suspect that there are a lot more people who are more bisexually oriented, at least that they have that the potential in them, but they have created a taboo and suppressed one side or the other. And I think for most people, that's the gay side that gets suppressed, because that's what society pressures us to do and creates so much taboo around. And then I think if you look at someone maybe who might have some bisexual tendencies and has suppressed the heterosexual side, then it's possible they experience some personal experience that they associated negatively with heterosexual sex. Like they maybe saw abuse maybe they saw their parents and they thought their dad abused their mom or something like that. And they created an association. It's not logical, right? It's not logical, but they may have created an association, and now they've created a taboo associated with heterosexual sex. And maybe in their mind, they've associated it with abuse. Or maybe they witnessed, they just witnessed something that they associated with that made them create a taboo around it. I'm just speculating again. And I was doing the same thing when I was talking about BDSM. And I'm talking about both these subjects from the point of view of someone who is both gay and also kinky. So I'm kinky myself.
And you're kind of new to being kinky, right? Or to exploring?
No.
It? Oh.
No.
Are you new to being, I don't know which word you used, top, dom, master. Are you new to being a dom?
I am, well, you could. I guess you could say relatively. I'm trying to think. I'll get you a history. I think I probably started exploring kink a little bit. It started with reading some books by Anne Rice. She's writing under a different name. Are you familiar with her books?
Yeah. What was the name? Okay. My wife has them all.
Something about it was about some princes and princesses. And they were like, I can't remember what they're called now. It's a long time ago. But that was back when I was that was in my early 20s. I'm in my 40s now.
Oh, it's Anne Rampling was the name she wrote under. Or was it okay. Anne Roquelaire?
Roquelaire.
Like that. Yeah.
I think it was Roquelaire. And that was probably my introduction, and I just started exploring it right away. I was very reluctant at first because I just felt really dirty. I'm like, no, I can't think about this. But that didn't last too long, and I started exploring it and started talking to people online. But you have to understand, online was a lot more limited than it is now. I mean, you could kind of talk to people by email and things. There weren't really, you know, the web was not that big yet.
What year was this, like 95, 96 or something?
No, it was been sooner than that, but... years before that, I believe. I think it would have been around 92, 93.
So you were talking news groups, not the web.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So it was more limited. And since then, I definitely started off submissive and then shifted gradually over time.
Now, that was another misconception, what I believe was a misconception or generalization that I saw you have. It was actually in the... where we were fighting with that troll recently, where we were valiantly donning our armor and defending against trolls on the internet together.
Yeah.
You said something about like most or many doms begin as subs or apprentices subs and then work to, you know, learn the ropes and be. That is not necessarily true. That used to be true in the gay leather community. Like that was how you did it. You apprenticed it. But I've known since I was 5 years old that I'm a dom and not even necessarily a top. Like I've had stuff, you know, I'm generally a top, but I've also, you know, enjoyed telling women what to do to me from when I'm on, like, you know, they're strapping one on or whatever. I'm not always a top, but I'm always a dom. And okay. It's interesting, too, that you said, like, you felt dirty. Like, but at that point in your life, you did not feel dirty about being gay, right?
For the most part, I'd worked through that. I had to go through a phase I think in my head, I always felt like there was nothing really wrong with it. I mean, from a very short period of realizing it, you know, it was one of those things I didn't think about until I realized I was gay, right?
Yeah.
I didn't really give much thought to my position on gayness. I just didn't think about it. I thought it was an extremely rare thing at best until I realized I suddenly was. And then I felt like the only gay person in maybe four in the entire country or something. And then it wasn't long before I started to realize, oh, wait, this is actually more common than I thought. But I still felt very isolated because, again, the internet was not as readily accessible.
Right. Here's what I'm getting at is, go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Well, I was just saying that I think in my head, I didn't feel like it was a dirty thing. I very quickly came to terms with, well, this is how I am. So how can it be dirty? It just is. It's just what I am. And if I'm this way and I didn't choose it, then how can that possibly be wrong or dirty?
Here's my thing. I think that kink is currently societally where homosexuality was at about 1950. It's not illegal per se, the way homosexuality was generally in America in the 50s, but it's kind of looked at it with as much misunderstanding and stupidity. And, you know, when you've got people who are like bastions of liberty, like Adam Kokesh and Stefan Molyneux, I actually took him to task on an episode and then sent him some stuff and he went and looked at it and changed his tune on it and no longer, you know, says it's a bad thing or that it's indicative of having been abused or there's something wrong with it or you need to work through it. But when you have people who are like dead on with most of what they say and people are looking up to them and they're saying in this one area that's important to me, that it's wrong in some way, I kind of feel like, you know, not a gay rights activist, but a kink rights activist, you know, not that I want there to be like laws to protect it particularly, but I mean, there's laws against it in a way. In England, any sex that leaves a mark on the other person, even if it's consensual, is against the law. In Wyoming, in Wyoming, they just passed a law that it's illegal to choke your wife, as if they needed another law for that. But there's nothing, there's nothing in that law about consent. So if you're choking your wife in consensual sex and the police walk in or see you through the window, they can come in and arrest you and they'd probably take away your gun rights and all sorts of nasty things. So it right. really is, you know, I,
but what you're getting at is though, the culture though, still we need a more accepting culture.
Yeah. I mean,
regardless of the law,
15 years ago, it was illegal to have butt sex in Texas and someone got arrested for it and went to the Supreme Court. I don't want BDSM to get into the courts at all. I just want, you know, in a libertarian paradise with no central government or no government, things would be dealt with by, you know, pure shame and pure discussion. And that's what I'm taking on myself to do with people bashing kink in the liberty community. So if anyone wonders why I'm like, meh, 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 when people do that, that's why.
I hear you. It's good too, because you're probably more knowledgeable about it than I am.
I've written books about it, which doesn't mean I'm knowledgeable, but I've actually co-written a book that's kind of considered a canonical, what's the word? Like, you know, part of the canon of the work of BDSM.
Nice. Yeah, you know, and I just want to concede up front that I'm just expressing thoughts and personal anecdotes, which are not scientific.
You're listening to the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast, a tasty stew of freedom and fun. Subscribe at kittyfeet.com. That's kittyfeet.com.
Cool. Yeah, I asked you to turn down a nun's cunt hair, and you said you never heard that. I made that up. Yeah, I got a dozen
of them.
I love
that term.
Got a dozen of them, Dale. So, yeah, where were we? Oh, I do want to, after the kink talk, I do want to write this down. I want to ask you how you solved your mumble echo problem, because that's been bugging the hell out of me, and no one knows.
I'll do my best to explain it to you. I had technical help, but I have the basic gist of it.
Okay.
Which, yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, my kink, like my definition of myself as a kinky man is stronger than my definition of myself as a straight man or a bi man. And so I get upset when people criticize it, I guess. So yeah. I am convinced you weren't criticizing it now. So we're both holding hands and skipping down the street now.
I think I was trying to, what I was trying to convey is that I do feel that not everyone is healthy about their approach to kink, and just as a lot of people aren't healthy about their approach to relationships in general.
A lot of people are not healthy about their relation. Can you turn up a nun's cunt hair now? Now I'm way a bit louder than you. My wife deals with a divorce attorney.
That's what I said. Is that their approach to relationships isn't necessarily healthy, whether it's kinky or not.
Yeah.
And I think that applies also with the kink community. I've had anecdotal experiences where I'm looking at any particular person and going, I don't think this person has a healthy attitude about this, and probably not about relationships in general, whether they were kinky or not. And so, again, anecdotal experiences and not a whole lot of positive experiences to offset it. So that's what sort of colored my view. And I'm just being honest there. So as long as I've been in it, just maybe not had the best. And maybe I haven't been pursuing it right myself to find the quality people, you know. Who knows?
I just sent you for later if you want. Or I could read it on the air. Acid test for dominance.
I think I found it.
Okay.
Yeah, I searched it and found it.
All right. Well, I'm going to share it on this episode. So what else? What else, sir? Dude?
Man, well,
mister?
What else? I guess I would just sort of close out that discussion with saying that I'm still open to it, obviously. I haven't closed off from finding someone who's also into kink. But I'm also open to vanilla relationships. So,
all right, boys, he's single.
And that's right.
I'll link his Facebook page so you can.
I've got some dates lined up.
Cool. Well, send me
and kink.
When we're done, send me the best picture you have of you, and I'll use that for the episode. And this isn't coming out for till a week from Saturday.
Okay.
So maybe, yeah.
I mentioned it on my show last night.
Ask him if he's still single then. Oh, what, you mentioned it was this Saturday?
I mentioned that we were recording a show. Mm-hmm. I didn't know when it was going to be out, but I mentioned it on the show last night.
Yep. Did anyone call you up and try to talk you out of it?
No. And we put a link on our show page as well to your show.
To the Freedom Fiends or the Anarchy Gumbo? It's going to be on the Anarchy Gumbo.
Right, Anarchy Gumbo.
Yep. Well, cool. I guess we've wrapped that up in a tight little leather package with a pink bow on it. What do you do? Talk about what you do, because a lot of people listen to the Gumbo, don't listen to any other Liberty Cast, and are kind of new to it and don't know anything about it. So who are you and what do you do, Dale?
Well, my main focus.
What's your last
at the
name?
Moment?
In case I'm hearing this on radio, Dale Everett. All right.
Yes, and my main focus at the moment is it's essentially a radio show and podcast, because we do it live and it broadcasts over the Liberty Radio Network. That's LRN.FM, and that's called Flaming Freedom. It started out as Prometheus Unchained, and we decided that was just hard to spell, and we were using, and because it was hard to spell, we were using Flaming Freedom for our website and giving that URL out, and very confusing and not very good for branding.
Kind of like Anarchy Gumbo is kittyfeet.com for some reason. I like the new name a lot better for your, I like Flaming Freedom a lot better than, I couldn't even pronounce that, man, let alone spell it. Well, and it's a movie now, and people would be confused, Prometheus.
Yes, there's Prometheus, the movie. A lot of people are still referring to it as Prometheus Unchained, which is kind of frustrating for me, but we've done everything we can to rebrand it as Flaming Freedom. So
the first six episodes of Freedom Fiends, we were called the Guns and Weed Podcast. And there's actually people who've said they never would have gone to a podcast called that. And it, you know, they heard of that. And then when it was Freedom Fiends, they went to it. So branding's good.
Yeah. And Flaming Freedom is basically, we're talking about liberty. And I try to keep it very broad, essentially liberty, but it's specific in that we try to focus on LGBT subjects. And I feel like my main goal with that is
What is that for someone who doesn't know? There might be people listening who don't know it.
Lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender.
Thank you.
And my main goal with that is I feel like there are so many people in that community. And it's a pretty big community, but it is a niche market. I feel like there are so many people in that community that really should be receptive to the liberty message. And I want to recruit them. I want to get them into the liberty movement. And so that I don't want to just talk to Liberty people who are already in the Liberty movement. I want to reach out to people who aren't particularly and introduce them to the idea.
Same here. Same here. You know, that would be a good topic for a niche book if you ever wanted to write a book. I interviewed a guy who wrote a book called Why Catholics Should Become Libertarians. I think there's a market for a book of, you know, why GLBT, what is it? Gay?
LGBT.
Yeah. Why the gay should become libertarian. And I would use the word libertarian, not anarchist, because anarchist scares people off. But once they get libertarian, they get anarchist eventually. So
yeah, I actually largely avoid the word libertarian too, because it's associated with the Libertarian Party.
Party.
And that's not necessarily what I'm into. So I try to use liberty, which is an even broader term that most people should be able to associate with. And
I haven't found a term for what I am yet, man. It does not. I mean, libertarian people think the party. Anarchist, they think you blow shit up or you're a communist. Agorist, yeah, they think you're a farmer.
Yeah, I think, yeah, exactly. So most people don't even know what that word means.
Voluntarist, they think you build Habitat for Humanity houses.
Yeah.
You know, I'm still looking for the word. We actually have a contest every once in a while on Freedom Fiends, and nobody's won it yet to come up with a better word.
Yeah, I was trying to talk about voluntarism with someone at a Keen festival, a Freedom Fiend festival, and at some point he said, and I didn't catch it until later, he said something, but, you know, sometimes people need to get paid for their work.
Voluntarists love to get paid for their work.
Right. And so, once again, that's a word that people, when they hear, they don't know what it means. And so they're thinking that you're encouraging volunteer work, which is fine. But that's not what it's about.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I don't know what to call it yet. So, so you do Flaming Freedom. What else do you do? You do Free Talk Live one day a week, or right, 2 days a week?
I did. I don't live in Keene anymore. It's just not practical to do.
Where do you live?
So I live in Manchester, which is about an hour and 15 minutes from Keene. I'm not going to drive there every week.
Who took your place on it?
Well, a number of people. I think Derek did for a while. Derek sort of came in around the time I left. And there's occasionally people's schedules change, and it just shifts the schedule over at Free Talk Live. So I have other creative projects. I'm also a writer. I'm working on a novel that I've been working on for way too long. I almost don't even want to talk about it because I need to do more on it before I talk about it. It's going to be called Where the Mountains Meet the Sea.
Is that a Jimi Hendrix line?
I don't know. It has werewolves, and there's a love story, and there's some murder mystery stuff in there, and a station out at sea that does all kinds of things that would otherwise be illegal because they're working outside of the out in international waters so they can get away with more stuff. So there's a little bit of like almost seasteading stuff going on, although not the political side of it so much as just the entrepreneurship of someone doing building a station out at sea. And that's probably the most I want to say about it right now because I haven't written enough.
That's cool. I respect that you don't want to talk about it a lot and that you talked about it that much. I really don't like hearing writers talk about the book they're going to write or that they're working on.
Right.
Unless they're people.
I feel like I'm jinxing myself. I'm like,
you're
I
not,
need to.
One, you're
you know,
not.
I've written about a third of it, and I've outlined it pretty detailed. It's definitely a work in progress, but it is it's a lot of work.
I've got 11 published
books. Anyone who
books
wants
out.
To write.
I've got 11 published books out, and I make part of my living, or like a third of my living, as a writer. And it is not easy, and I respect for anybody that does it.
Yeah. Oh, me too. And whenever I hear someone say, well, I have a lot of ideas for, and I might write, I'm like, you need to take this seriously. It's a lot of work.
Yeah. I actually wrote a line in my first novel, which is about a drug addict, about people not completing things they started. I said every drunkie lying in the gutter has a notebook full of half executed ideas.
Yeah, that's my dad, by the way. Oh my God, my dad. Yeah, my dad did start a business. I got to give him that, and he did really well for a while, and then eventually that went out of business. But he went, I think a couple of decades supporting himself with that business. So I'll give him that. But then after that, it was all kinds of half-assed ideas.
Takes more than a pen and a six pack to be Bukowski, you know?
Yeah. And in the meantime, I make my living essentially as a landlord, and I'm doing creative projects. So the writing and, I have written two feature length films, and we started to film one and had complications. I'll just leave it at that. So I still want to get into that at some point, but I'm going to get back into it via short films first. And I've invested in quite a bit of equipment for that, and that's another project I want to pursue. It's kind of like I'm in a position where I can do that.
I like equipment talk. And you're a landlord, are you a capitalist? Are you an anarcho-capitalist?
I guess technically I'm an anarcho-capitalist, not a big fan of the term, but...
Because it sounds like I love the term. It's the closest thing to what I am, and I'll call myself that, but it sounds to most people like two of the really worst things they can think of.
Yeah, and for a lot of people, it is. It's the epitome of evil, because if there's someone who really looks at life from a very socialist point of view, it sounds like the epitome of evil.
Well, I'm actually trying to work with Derek a little bit, because I've done four films and I've toured with one of them and I've got distribution for them. And you know, like I've done films like almost in Hollywood. Like one of my films is narrated by Robert Downey Jr. And I've dealt with all kinds of distribution and all kinds of issues. And I was thinking of like giving him the list of places I toured with my film DIY or Die: How to Survive as an Independent Artist in Europe and in America. But I'm thinking like, a lot of those places were anarchist places, but they were leftist anarchist places. I don't know if they dig his thing, but his thing is more about a lot of what he would do, leftist anarchists would do too. So, and there's really not a capitalist message in his thing. It's just about cops are idiots and dealing with cops who are idiots. So it might work. He might be able to tour. I'm going to give him the list of the places I toured.
Where we disconnect, I think our hearts are largely in the same places. I think where we disconnect is just sort of seeing the same problems and not coming to the same conclusions about the solutions to those problems.
You and me, or you and Derek?
I'm saying different types of anarchists. If you look at the different flavors of anarchists, we're all sort of it's emotionally in a similar place, and we recognize a lot of the same problems, but we're just coming to different conclusions about how to solve those problems.
Do you remember that video of those red and black anarchists, leftist anarchists in Portland, Oregon, who refused to let cops into their coffee shop and made the press?
Yes, I remember hearing about that and reading about it.
I posted that on my Facebook, and this guy I didn't know at the time, named Jim Object, who's since become a friend, and I interviewed him recently on the Gumbo. His comment was, "I hate commies, but I hate cops more. Go, commie, go." And I was like, that was the funniest thing I've seen in like a year, man. I just fell in love
That's kind of where I stood on that. I didn't necessarily agree with their philosophy, but at least they hated cops, right?
and I was speculating, on how it might work differently, you know, in a free state project run coffee house. And I was thinking, well, they'd probably either, you know, the owner who'd be open carrying would walk over and tell the cop, "You're welcome to stay, but you have to go put your gun in your car." Or, you know, they'd probably say, "I want to buy you breakfast and sit down and film you for YouTube and have you justify your job."
Yeah.
So anarchists and the people who love them.
Yeah, we have a lot in common with, if you think about it, with the socialist style of anarchist, and there are obviously some clear breaks, but we tend to be anti-corporate. I mean, corporations have become intertangled in government, and a lot of them, I think, are wealthy not because they worked really hard and earned their money, but because they've bought favors from government, and government actually does work for them, unlike the common man. You know, I feel like I'm really in line with I'm for the underdog in today's society in the same way that a lot of social anarchists are, but for different reasons, right?
Well, where I break off from those guys, those folks, is that I can't get a straight answer from most of them about, once the state's eliminated, are you going to redistribute my wealth by force? And fortunately, yeah. Most of them don't own guns, and I do, so it doesn't matter what they say. But I can't see how you can eliminate private ownership voluntarily across the board, unless you're going to send me to re-indoctrination camps to make me love socialism or communism, anarcho-communism.
Yeah. Well, I just, what worries me is that I feel like all of these different problems are culturally driven. I feel like we're not going to solve them until we change individuals, change the attitudes of individuals, and until whether or not government is not going to go away until people stop supporting it. And you know, even these, go ahead.
I was going to go off on a tangent. You can finish.
Yeah, these socialist anarchists, they just want a different style of government, really. They see a less top-down style of government, but it's still going to be this force that where majorities stomp all over the rights of minorities. And I look at all these, I feel like cultural change isn't going to happen until we actually create a cultural shift, and that's going to mean changing people's hearts and minds on an individual level. I look at things like where, you know, people complain about Hitler and think Hitler was this horrible person. Well, he was, but society wanted a Hitler at that time. If it hadn't been that guy, it would have been someone else. You know,
same thing's true of Ron Paul, you know? If it weren't him, it would have been someone else. And I don't vote, and I like what someone said up there in New Hampshire that Ron Paul is my favorite government thug or something like that. yeah. I think it was I can't remember who said it, but it was the guy that was banned from Porkfest this year. That's how I'm remembering his name. What's his name?
Curtis.
Curtis, right? Yeah, he said that. I don't have the exact quote, but it was great, and I misquote him a lot on that, or quote him, but not word for word. You know, do you listen to Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker, ever?
I haven't gotten to listen to him a lot. I'm trying to listen to him more. I've read amazing. Some of his stuff. Yeah.
Amazing. You know, I think he's going to be listened to in 100 years. I mean, I think they're going to use his podcasts in libertarian paradise private schools someday.
Well, I'm a bad Quaker myself, so I can definitely relate, and I really feel like I should listen more. Yeah.
Mark is too. Well, Mark's a good Quaker. Mark Edge is a Quaker and does not carry a gun, or does? He can't legally. Do you carry a gun?
I don't carry a gun, but I'm a bad Quaker for a different reason, in that I am somewhat more religiously intolerant than a Quaker is supposed to be. you know, I'm supposed to be incredibly tolerant of other people's viewpoints and religions, and I do try to be, but I kind of draw the line at where I feel they're abusive and even bordering on violent. And, you know, if you have a religion, for instance, that teaches children that if they don't believe a certain way, they're going to burn in hell for all eternity, that seems very violent to me. So as a Quaker, I take issue with that.
You know, my mother heard the preacher say something like that to my sister in the 60s, before I was born, early 60s. And she overheard it after church. She was saying, like, you've missed two weeks of Sunday school. You know, little girls who miss Sunday school burn in a lake of fire. My mother heard it, ran across the room, said, Jesus is a loving God. He loved the little children. Don't speak to my kids that way. We're joining a different church. And left the church that day, was a pretty ballsy thing for a woman to do in 1960. I respected her for that a lot.
Oh, hell yeah. And that's exactly what I'm talking. That was child abuse, and she realized it. You know, and thank goodness that she did. But that was child abuse, and she protected her children from that. So kudos to her. But that's how I look at it.
Yep.
You're listening to the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast. That proves you're smarter than most people.
Have you ever been to a 12-step meeting?
I have not.
The reason I was asking is I have been to a lot of them, and I'm a recovering alcoholic sober since '94. But I've also been to a Quaker meeting, and I think that somewhere along the lines, 12-step meetings got influenced by Quaker meetings. The idea of, like, no central leader, you sit in a room until you're inspired, you stand up and testify and then sit down. Mm. And I'm trying to figure out if that's true or not, but you haven't been to one, so I won't ask
you. I haven't been to a 12-step meeting. That what you're talking about sounds like a Quaker meeting, but I've also heard that what bugs me about 12-step programs is that they are imposed upon people by the government.
Yeah.
And they're religious. I don't mind people going to a religious event, of course. I mean, I am actually pretty tolerant of religion until they get violent, but I don't mind someone going to a religious event, but acknowledge it as a religious event, and the government shouldn't be endorsing it.
That's a government problem, not a 12-step problem.
There are
12-step meetings that will sign off for the judge's slip of paper. First of all, hey people, I've been to a million of those. You can sign it yourself and the judge won't know. Second, and I know it was never forced, but I used to be the secretary and I'd be signing them for people and I'd get sick of it. And I'd just be like, I got a hot date after the meeting, man. You sign this yourself. And they're like, oh, I can? Okay. And it always worked. So It's not a policy of AA or NA to do that. And they're actually, all the meetings are autonomous on their own as long as they do certain things of the 12 traditions, which is the kind of democratic anarchy by which AA is and all 12 step meetings are run. And I really dig the political structure of AA, and I've written a book about it.
Okay.
But it literally, it's a government problem. It's not an AA problem. There are a few AA meetings that assign those things because they think, well, you know, as long as anybody who gets help,
I was going to say it's sometimes it's a requirement of somebody's bail or parole that they go to AA. And it'll be specifically mentioned. It won't be alcohol treatment in the broader sense. It'll be you have to go to AA.
Well, because
there are religious elements to AA.
Right. There's also,
which is fine.
There's also atheist AA meetings. You can be an atheist and be an AA. But a lot of meetings, you know, they use the word God.
Have you seen the Penn & Teller episode about it?
About what?
It's sketchy to call it an AA. I mean, some of the 12 steps as they've been presented to me, they sounded like you have
music?
To.
It sounds like you're at a parade. It sounds like there's drums, like cymbals, every time you're talking.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm not hearing it now. That was really weird. It was like
there's a very, very distant tile saw that I can hear, but you shouldn't be able to hear that because I'm getting my bathroom remodeled. But that's like downstairs and fairly well isolated from this room. So
okay, sorry. So Penn & Teller did an episode about AA?
Right, in 12-step programs, but AA was probably the one they probably focused on the most, and talking about acknowledging that there's a higher power than yourself and that you're helpless to solve your problem and so forth. And it sounds very religious. It's hard for me to picture that from an atheist point of view.
Well, Penn & Teller, I love their shows, and they do a lot of good to bring people to liberty, to like, you know, Libertarian Party level liberty. They aren't always right, you know, and I was going to get into the good man.
I guess not, but I agree with them on that subject, though, because I can't recall for instance, the 12 steps from memory, but I don't think they lied about they're quoting them and were talking about.
First of all,
I tend to agree with them on
there's a term that's quoted in the AA book. It's taken from some other philosopher, but it's the concept of contempt prior to investigation. I think you are exhibiting that because you're believing what Penn & Teller are telling you when you've never been to an AA meeting, and you've probably never read. Have you ever read the AA 12-step book or the AA book?
No, I haven't.
All right,
I've seen the 12 steps, but that's all.
So you're taking the advice. You're taking, you know, the kind of Carney show libertarian version advice of a professional stage magician and comedian telling you how it is.
Okay, that's fair enough.
I've spent 16 years going to these meetings
every day. People should take what I said with a grain of salt. That's how much experience I have of it. So
yeah, I mean, I like Penn & Teller. I mean, I get the DVDs from Netflix of the bullshit show and I watch them. I just didn't know they had one on AA. I'll have to watch it. But
yeah,
you know, they're right about 80% of the time and 20% of the time. I mean, they admit
They've admitted being wrong about some things, and they've retracted some things they've said on prior episodes and such.
Yeah, and Stefan Molyneux's right about 98.72% of the time, but he was really wrong about kink, and I showed him that, and he later conceded it. So, you know, people with open minds.
Cool.
But, you know, Penn & Gillette won't return my emails, so there.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've tried to contact him, not about that, but to get him
watch
on the
it and get watch it and get back to me on what you you know what you thought about it. And
well, here's and what I'll say to... about it. Here's what I'll say about it. AA was started by two Christians, a butt doctor, what do you call a proctologist, and a stockbroker. They were Christian, and it is a higher power thing. It is, but basically, it's a God thing. But they kind of worked around a loophole / trick to allow agnostics and atheists to get sober. They basically said use the group as your higher power, which is really weird to me. I mean, I'm such an autonomous person now and a dominant. It's really hard for me to like turn my will over to someone else. But I'm a deist, but I wasn't always. Like I was kind of a theist, and then my only kid died of cancer, and I'm like, there is no fucking loving God. There's a watchmaker at best, you know.
I'm pretty close to deist myself, I guess.
So
pretty close to that.
Yeah, there's a loophole of like how atheists and anarchists can get sober in that, but it is not a religious program, but a spiritual program. But I could talk for 14 hours about AA, but you don't know a lot about it, so it would just be me talking. I'm calling to talk to you.
Yeah, how did we get on the subject of AA?
I asked you if you thought Quaker meetings.
Oh, right.
So I asked you about Ben Quaker, and he has been talking a lot, and he's been teaching a lot, I'd say, lately, about the great man myth. Do you know what the great man myth is?
I don't think so.
It's basically deifying humans, you know, like patriots do it with the founding fathers. Obama humpers do it with Obama. Some Ron Paul fans do it with Ron Paul, like thinking there is
so
this.
It's a kind of idolatry.
Yeah. It's really kicking God off the throne. You know, it's like basically saying there's this one man or one group of men or women who can save us. And Ben says that has to go away. That belief has to be debunked in people before the state will go away. And he differentiates between the government and the state, which I think is important too. He says the government is the buildings, the laws, the salaries, the pensions, the cops' guns, the marble buildings, the robes on the judges. But the state is what perpetuates the government. And the state is the belief in people's minds of horizontal enforcement of statism. And that has to go away for the government to go away. And for the state to go away, the great man fallacy has to be shown to be a fallacy. And I kind of think that a lot of anarchists still have a great man fallacy. You know, they'll quote Mises like they're quoting Jesus, and they'll quote literally. And I think that's something to address and point out. What do you think about that?
I think you're onto something. This I think is at the root of why I'm an anarchist in the first place, is that I don't feel like the idea of government can ever actually do more good than it does harm. It's inherently a flawed notion, and a lot of that is built into this idea that we elevate some people over others. This is really at the crux of what Quakers believe. There's not that much dogma in Quakerism. You know, most religions have a lot of dogma, especially like the Catholic religion is notorious for it. There's a movie called Dogma that's all about that, right?
And I love the Quaker
religion. Yeah, the Quaker religion has very little dogma. There's very little that you are expected to believe as a Quaker. It's very broad, and a lot is accepted. But one of the things that's at the crux of it is that you do not elevate some people over others, displayed in the meeting style, that we don't have a preacher who tells everyone else what to believe.
And that's because you're kicking God off the throne if you do that, right?
Yeah, I think there's a humbleness to it, that none of us is perfect. None of us knows all the answers. It's in our human nature, and we are all connected to the divine. We all have the divine within us, is the idea. Every living thing and everything actually has the divine within. And when we're meditating, when we're in prayer, we are becoming very, very quiet and listening to what is often referred to as like the still, quiet voice within for guidance. So I would say that, you know, when people are talking about prayer, I tend to agree with the skeptics who say that who think it's silly that people are praying for something and trying to make something happen with prayer. I tend to be with them there, because I look at prayer, for me, it's for guidance. I'm not trying to work any mumbo jumbo and heal people distantly.
You listen more
or
than
anything
talk.
Like that. Absolutely. I mean, for me, prayer is about seeking guidance and from that still, quiet voice, and that's the spiritual aspect of it for me.
Cool. I got to run out and get my cat. He just got out, but go ahead and talk. Talk about your path to liberty and how you got to where you were.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, I went through the whole gambit of being initially probably self-describing as a liberal and a Democrat. And then after a period of time, sort of became a Republican. I'm trying to remember when that happened. I think there was a particular candidate who struck me as an unusual Republican, and that he was representing, or that he was fiscally conservative and yet socially liberal. And that's where I felt that's what I felt described me the best. And I got disillusioned with that after a while, and actually looked into libertarianism a politically, you know, this is my political path, but the whole time I felt like I was, I believed in the concepts of libertarianism. I still remember when a friend of mine was trying to explain to me what libertarian was when I'd never heard of the word before. And he was trying to describe this particular political point of view to me. And the example he gave me was that libertarians believe that if you own your business, you should be able to run it however you want.
Yeah.
And that included, for instance, hiring and firing as you please. And the subject of firing someone for being gay, because he and I were both gay, was that's the example he gave. If you wanted to fire someone for being gay, you could do that. And I would say, well, what would his justification for that be? And he would say, well, as a libertarian, he doesn't believe he needs a justification. He thinks he can hire or fire whoever he wants because it's his business. And I thought about that for just the briefest moment. I'm like, oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I think I kind of blew his mind because he was a liberal and he didn't expect me to, he was expecting that to turn me off to libertarianism. Because he's like, look, they could fire gay people just for no reason.
Yeah,
and I immediately go, oh, then it's bad.
This whole Chick-fil-A thing is like really pointing out the stupidity in people wanting the government to do things for them.
Yeah, well, how so? What are people doing? What are they expecting to happen?
Well, a lot of people are just voting with their wallet, which is good. You know, a lot of gay people and liberal people are saying, I'm never eating there again. And a lot of Republicans and conservatives are saying, I've never eaten there before, but I'm going there for lunch today now. I like them.
Yeah. But, well, that to me seems as silly.
Rahm Emanuel, mayor of Chicago, Obama's right-hand man, said he would not allow a Chick-fil-A to come to Chicago, which is, you know, the ACLU quickly pointed out to him that was illegal and also would set a precedent to where the opposite could happen, where somebody, you know, in Atlanta could ban a gay-friendly business.
Right. Well, that's what I try to bring up on my show when someone is giving kudos to the Boston mayor. The Boston mayor was saying the same thing. You said someone in Chicago, right?
Yeah, Rahm Emanuel. He used to run America with Obama until he decided he could do better running Chicago.
I see. Well, there's the Boston mayor said something similar, that I'm not going to let a Chick-fil-A open here. And a lot of liberals were cheering him on for that stance. And I was trying to point out to them, like, well, you know, the ring of power is being used on your behalf at the moment. But turn around next week or the week after or the next politician, and he might be using the ring of power against your interests, and you need to be thinking ahead before you cheer this guy on. And I just look at that. He's really abusing his power. And let's deal with Chick-fil-A in a peaceful way and not through government. But
many people like the power abused when it's for their purpose, and it's sickening, and it almost seems a majority. And it seems like if it's not, it's going to be within a generation.
Yeah.
Which is why I'm ranting on the internet 24/7. That's all I can do.
Yeah. Well, what gets me is that people who feel like you have to take one side or the other, too. That blows my mind. I don't like the mayor's decision, but I still don't like Chick-fil-A. I'm not going to boycott Chick-fil-A. You know, boycott is where you counter the boycott by trying to go support the business. And a lot of people are boycotting Chick-fil-A because of what the mayor said. And that is the most circuitous market signal I can imagine, that you're expecting, like, I'm going to go support Chick-fil-A because the Boston mayor, who's liberal and who's abusing his power, is against them.
The whole thing was probably a strategized idea to sell Chick-fil-A and get attention for them. I wouldn't put it past it in, you know, like someone who's like, well, we have this Facebook campaign and it's not doing enough. Okay, we need to really stir things up. I could see that happening.
You know what? I've talked about Chick-fil-A in probably at least the last three shows in a row because new stuff kept coming up regarding this story, and I keep talking about it on the show. And by last night's show, I was craving Chick-fil-A so badly. And I don't eat that. I can't eat there normally just because of my diet. I don't eat gluten. I try to watch my starches and breads. Yeah, and
it's all bread. And
yeah.
Where are you from?
Breaded, and I'm from Georgia originally.
Yeah, lived in L.A. for 8 years. Southern accent. You lived in L.A. for 8 years. Were you there when I was there? When were you there?
I was there 5 years ago. About 6 years ago,
I was
maybe.
There 5 years ago. I was in L.A. until, I moved there in 2001. Lived in Echo Park in Los Angeles until 2006. Then met my wife, moved in with her in Agoura Hills, and then we moved to Wyoming 3 years ago. Where'd you live?
Huh. I lived in Culver City for most of it.
Huh.
In that area, that same area. I moved around a little. I lived in three different places, but they were all in that, right around that area.
What'd you do there, and were you libertarian anarchist yet then?
No, I wasn't anarchist until the tail end of it. I was probably more libertarian-leaning Republican. actually, no, I wouldn't even say that. I was technically Republican at the beginning of my... When I started there, I went to work for Raytheon, which is a huge defense contractor. I was a software engineer, and I got my master's degree while I was living there, also in software engineering. And I started off probably technically registered as a Republican, but still a Democrat at heart, and still basically a liberal at heart.
I'm still a registered libertarian Republican. Leanings. I don't vote, but I don't know if you can... You know, it's kind of like you have to have a country. I think, I mean, could I go down to City Hall and say, I want to unregister to vote? I don't think they'd know what to do. I think they'd say, well, you can register as anything else, but you know.
They won't. Then, some people have tried it here and it hasn't worked out. they don't like to do that.
They probably put you on the no-fly list or something.
Yeah. Well, they just say, no, you can't unregister. You can change your registration once you've registered. That's the word. That's the what some people here in New Hampshire have gotten.
You can probably change to independent as your registration, but
sure.
I don't want to do that. I want to unregister to vote, but I don't think you can.
Yeah.
I
thought about doing it, and I was going to look into it for a while, and I wasn't going to tell them. I was just going to say, well, you're not going to register me? Okay, well, I've moved. I'm not going to tell you my new address. And then what are they going to do? Are they going to leave you on with the old address, or are they going to unregister you? I think at some point they'd be between a rock and a hard place. I was curious what was going to happen if I tried that. But in any case, I started out as technically a registered Republican, but still voting Democrat, but I wanted to vote in Republican primaries. That was sort of my mindset, and I still, for instance, voted for Al Gore when he ran against Bush.
Your strategy? Why do you do that?
Well, at the time, what made me register Republican was, I think, Arlen Specter ran, and at the time, he sounded like a fiscal conservative but social liberal, which is how I pictured myself.
Do you still vote?
So I actually voted for Ron Paul in the primary. That's the last time I voted, and that was just a statement. It wasn't so much... You know, I didn't really care. I don't feel like I would vote if I actually thought it might affect the outcome or had any chance of affecting the outcome. It was really just more of a statement for me to do that.
So, but we got a few minutes left here. I think I sidetracked you heavily. It was an interesting sidetrack we went on. But did you finish your path to liberty?
It was the tail end of my time in L.A., when I actually finding out about the Free State Project and talking to people here, that I started to, I essentially lost faith in statism. I became a political atheist, which is an anarchist, effectively. I just lost any faith in it. And that was after thinking about it more and more. I'd become more libertarian, even more libertarian while in LA. I got more active in Republican Party politics, but trying to make the Republican Party be more libertarian. That was my mindset at the time.
I'm still listed, you know what the Republican Liberty Caucus is, right?
Yeah.
I'm the Wyoming chair of the Republican Liberty Caucus still, even though I've told them for a year I'm a non-voting anarchist and they should take me off the website.
Wow. Wow.
They really like my Guns and Weed movie, so they want to keep me on, even though I don't want to be on. Well, cool. I don't know. I love the guy who runs it, Dave Nail, but it's like, come on, man. You're drafting me to remain on this website.
Yeah, that's just, it's not appropriate to have you down as a representative when you're not a Republican anymore. So, or not really. Like you said, you're probably still registered technically as a Republican, but
yep.
It's just on paper.
So my final question is, how do you eliminate echo in Mumble?
Okay. Well, as I understand it, there are sort of two different channels of sound. And one of them is going into my headphones, and that includes Mumble, and that's like the sub channel. And then there's the main channel that I've got. I'm essentially subtracting out Mumble, and that's what gets sent back to. That's what's being broadcast through Mumble. So the sound going back is not repeating the sound that is coming in from Mumble. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, but how do you do it? What do you plug into what and what into what?
Oh, wow. Well, we've got a lot of chords going from... There's a lot of chords coming through different sound filtering devices here that go into different channels in my mixing board.
Are you set up like that right now?
Yeah.
When we get off, will you take a good picture of it, or two or three, however many pictures God. It is, and send it to me? That would be the best way to do it, I think. And then I post them with the episode.
I honestly, that's a lot more challenging than you might think. I don't have a camera with a flash and that will take a decent picture in this lighting. And it's a spaghetti. It looks like spaghetti.
All right. Well, I guess the mystery will remain unless you can describe it better than there's a bunch
like
of
I said,
tables.
I only had the gist for it. I had technical people helping me out at the time. If I spent some time looking at it, I can kind of map it again and get an idea.
Okay.
When I have a technical problem, I've gotten a lot better at diagnosing it and following the chords and everything. but it would be challenging. But you need to subtract out the sound that's being broadcast back with your mixer is what it comes down to.
Okay.
When you're mixing all your different sound streams together, and then subtract back out the mumble, and don't send it back. The stuff that's coming in, like for instance, your voice or any music beds when I'm on my show, the music beds are coming in from mumble, and those things I'm hearing them on one channel, but the sound that's being sent back is subtracting out the input.
It's called
from
a
mumble.
Mix minus, right?
Yes, it's a mix minus, exactly.
Ian mentioned that to me and said we might have to do one of those, and he'd tell us how to do it if we needed to, and we didn't need to. So maybe I need to ask Ian if he has a PDF or anything of that.
Yeah.
Or I can look on the internet.
He did. He helped us set it up. He was actually physically here helping us set it up. So
he's great.
Yeah.
He does a lot. Well, cool, man. You got any closing arguments there?
I don't think so.
Did you have fun? Was it good for you, baby?
Yeah, I especially love the kinky talk.
It was good for me.
I'm glad we kind of aired that out. I hope it conveyed where I was coming from better. I was just sort of speculating on some things.
I think it was good.
And
real good. Yep. Cool, man. Thanks for coming on. Worms.
Yeah, glad to be here.
Worms. Say worms.
Worms.
That's how we end Fiends. All right. The gumbo. Worms. Okay, thanks, man.
Sure.
Are you one of the 12% of Americans who still approves of our government? Then we need your help to force the other 88% into compliance. When you're not busy spying on your neighbors or squinting at everyone, tell anyone who will listen why more government is a good thing. You'll get a warm and fuzzy feeling demanding more taxes and arguing in favor of gun control while militarizing our police, because folks just aren't smart enough to handle real freedom.
That is so square. Check out the additional Freedom Fiend show, Freedom Fiends Live, every Sunday on the LRN.FM streaming feed or satellite radio.
Broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker inside a mountain near an undisclosed location in the rural Wild West of the occupied states of America.
Freedom Fiends Live expands on the Fiends' weekly Wednesday podcasts, but now we're kicking the hornet's nest live. Talk back to the back talkers every Sunday from 5 to 7 p.m. East Coast time. From the makers of Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. Freedom Fiends Live. Call in soon before we get droned.
Since time began, tyrants have taken aim at personal liberties. Now there's a movie that aims back.
The government has no more right to tell us what to put in our bodies than they have to take our guns or tell us what books we can read.
Six drug police were eaten by bears while raiding a marijuana farm.
On your knees, you dirty hippies!
Jesus.
On your knees!
What's the problem, officer?
Today, many cops who enforce pot laws do so only because it provides them with cushy jobs, good benefits, and a chance to push people around.
I was an undercover narcotics officer. The drug war is nothing but a farce.
The Second Amendment says you gotta keep you and your gat intact.
Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. A film by Michael W. Dean and Nima Vadadi.
DVD available now at gunsandweed.com or on Amazon. That's gunsandweed.com. Makes the perfect gift. Remember, that's gunsandweed.com.
Thank you for listening to the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast. Subscribe at kittyfeet.com. That's kittyfeet.com. All with a rotating guest on a spit. barbecued for your pleasure.
Outtakes, yay.